Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to the Forza Italian Football Podcast. I said it right this time. I'm your host, Connor Clancy, and I'm joined by only Kev Pogzielski this week. Kev, you can interpret that only however you like, but you're here. Vito's not. How are you?
I'm good. I must have missed you getting something wrong in the intro last week, but...
I just didn't say the name of the website that I've been editor of for about 5 years properly. Don't worry, it was nothing major. How are you keeping anyway, Kev? It's going to be a bit of a struggle without Vito for not the second week in a row, but the second of three pods that were without him. And it's always a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, it gives me a break from chewing everybody's ear off. And on the plus side, we don't get to play the game.
Yeah, you always have to upset me by talking about your happiness of not playing the game, but Vito did have his wisdom teeth removed, so he's not really in the mood to speak, but he's been working away behind the scenes of FIF, getting a lot of articles done. So Vito, we know you're listening. I hope you're feeling well soon and you can start eating steak and pizza and pasta and all of those things before you know it. I did chat to him briefly before coming on, and he said, Kev, that he's got serious cravings for pizza and pasta that he just can't satisfy right now. I think we've all been there, right? When you're sick and you can't eat, you want everything. Vito's going through that right now.
Well, yeah, cool. So I had coronavirus and lost sense of taste and smell, and I felt like crap. And the worst thing was I was trying to sort of get that, you know, make myself feel better with food, and because I couldn't taste any of it, it was even worse because you could see what it was. Yeah,
that must really mess with your brain a little bit. But anyway, on to the football. We do have some new features coming to the site, which I will talk about in just a moment. But just before we start, I'm going to run through all 10 of the Serie A results this weekend. And I need to take a deep breath because, oh boy, there were some good ones in there. It started at the conventional time of 3 p.m. on Friday afternoon. Lazio beat Crotone 3-2. Took a late goal from, guess who, Felipe Caicedo, to win it for them there. Then Atalanta beat Spezia 3-1, also on Friday evening. Saturday's games saw the entertainment continue. Sassuolo beat Verona 3-2, again late drama. Dusan Vlahovic scored a hat-trick as Fiorentina won 4-1 away at Benevento. And Udinese and Genoa drew 1-1 in probably the most predictable result of the round on Saturday night. Sunday picked up basically where Saturday afternoon had left off. Bologna beat Sampdoria 3-1. Fabio Quagliarella scored his 9th of the season. Kev, hello. Inter beat Torino 2-1 with a late goal. Parma went a goal ahead, then they went 2 goals ahead, and they only bloody held on. They beat Roma 2-0 in a result that was great, not only for them, but for Atalanta as well. Juve beat Cagliari 3-1 away on Sunday evening, and people think that was an adequate response to getting knocked out of the Champions League in midweek. And then the action finished with Napoli winning 1-0 away at the Stadio San Siro, beating AC Milan, who are in, I don't want to say free fall, but given how good they were to start the season, they're not too far off it. Kev, while I recompose myself and get a breath, what was your highlight of the weekend?
Oh, probably the way that Casado took that goal for Lazio, because it started the week off so well. Strange time for the weekend's fixtures to kick off.
Mm.
And I think he just, because it was obviously a shot, but you've got to make a judgment at that point, whether you sort of lift your legs to get out of the way. But he took it expertly, turned and fired past Cordaz. I'm just going to say Cordaz, assuming he was in goal, and I'm pretty sure he was.
I'd assume so. I would assume so. But anyway, the new features that I was alluding to are, we're going to be starting a new weekly roundup article every week of Serie A Femminile, it's a difficult word to say, women's Serie A and the women's Coppa Italia as well. We're going to be doing weekly pieces on those. Ewan Burns is going to be taking those on for us, and Vito Doria is going to be doing a weekly piece on the Primavera. So if women's football is your thing or youth football is your thing, we will cover you there on that as well. And I'm hoping to get an interview with a Fiorentina player in the coming week, so keep an eye out for that as well. The I don't know if you saw the Coppa Italia women results this weekend, but there were some two big ones. So it was the semi-final first legs, and Inter beat Milan, and it was their first ever derby win. First ever. There's only been about five or six games, but still. And Roma beat Juventus in the first leg of their game, and it was the first time Juve have lost to an Italian team since March 2019. What a run they're on. So yeah. Nothing changes between the men's game and the women's game. Juve dominate Italian football. Good to see. Kev, you look like you've got a question already.
Yeah, obviously, before we came on, I said I don't really get too involved with watching the women's game. But obviously, even now, I realise that Juventus are this kind of one of the dominant forces.
Mm.
The only thing I find a little disappointing when I speak to people that are more up to date, you know, more informed about the women's game, is that because of maybe the long-standing nature of the clubs in existence, you've got this scenario where almost you've got these 7-8 clubs across Europe. You've got, I think it's your Wolfsburg in Germany, your strong sides like Chelsea in the UK, that almost look set to form this group of clubs, almost like this Super League that Andrea Agnelli is wanting kind of the Champions League to become. And some have said you're not really going to get around that, because for the women's game to sort of get that popularity and exposure, they need that investment from the big clubs. But that's, you know, that was all I was just thinking about as you were really rolling off Juventus not losing for 2 years.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Ewan Burns' first piece is up on the website now, so head over and have a read of that. And then Vito's will be coming on Tuesday morning European time, because there is a game being played on Monday afternoon. But going forward, they will be hopefully up on Monday morning. So do keep an eye out for those as well. On to the Serie A then. Let's start where the action finished, Kevin. It was at the San Siro. And I mean, this was a game that had flashes, but largely could be nicely viewed in a 4-minute clip just showing the last 4 minutes of the match, or at least between the 88th and the 92nd, and then showing Politano's earlier goal as well. Matteo Politano did score the only goal of the game. It was a nice one. Napoli beat Milan 1-0, and that is a big result for both teams. Obviously, for one, it's quite positive, and the other, it's the opposite. But what did you make of this one? Were you like me in that the last 10 minutes had you gripped and everything else was just a bit okay?
Yeah, everything else was just a bit sort of, I suppose, underwhelming might be too strong a word. And Politano, the only thing on that goal really was the scuff in the shot with his weaker right foot probably helps him. I think Donnarumma is waiting to be sort of driven at and sort of setting himself. But it was a hard-fought win for Napoli. But, you know, at times anyway, certainly towards the end of the game, but not in the sense that it was kind of a snatch and grab. It was just, you know, the pressure was, as expected, coming from Milan towards the end of the game. And I'd been saying probably 10, 11 weeks ago that you're waiting for that blip to see if Milan can recover. And it appears that the blip is now coming so late in the season. It's less about whether they can recover and whether they will just snowball into, you know, a catastrophe and even maybe drop out of the Champions League places with Atalanta and Napoli still going strong and Roma with the potential to keep pace, not necessarily burst in, but if they can keep pace and Milan were to sort of really nosedive, then you'd be a little bit concerned for them. But yeah, the last 10 minutes you had the, you know, unless you've got a different view in it, I thought it was a dive from Hernandez for the penalty.
Yes.
There was the angle they were showing on the UK broadcast made it almost look like the when was it Bakayoko? I can't remember whoever it was.
I can't remember who it was either, to be honest.
Yeah. When he put his foot almost down on the floor, because they were doing it for almost from an aerial shot and Hernandez was sort of falling to the floor, it made it almost look like there'd been contact to make his leg fall to the floor. And I thought, oh my word, they're going to give that because of that. But it would have been incredibly soft. And then you have him chasing down Victor Osimhen, you know, a reckless challenge. And I say this even if you don't go to, you know, you don't go to ground like Hernandez did. It makes it look much worse, but it's, you know, you probably remember the horrific scenes when Heung-min Son sort of just tripped Andre Gomez for Everton a couple of seasons ago, and he had this sort of terrible... It wasn't as sort of reckless a challenge as Hernandez was, but they both, because the player is bursting away at pace, have the potential of, you know, if you fall awkwardly, you're doing some real damage. I was just surprised that he didn't get a red. Obviously, yeah, Gattuso got booked in the aftermath of that. And then a couple of minutes later, clearly for something he said, Ante Rebic got a red card. And yeah, it sort of breathed a little bit of life for the last 10 minutes into the game.
Yeah, well, we've got to kind of unpack that because there was a lot in there. Because you started with the Theo Hernandez dive, and it was a dive. I don't know how many times I'm going to have to say this, but contact does not mean a foul. And just because somebody touches you does not entitle you to throw yourself to ground like that. And I think Theo was probably well on his way before there was even the slightest touch on his sock. But yeah, that foul that he made on Aussie, man, I thought it was really reckless. And isn't that part of the rules? If a challenge is considered to be reckless like that, it could possibly be a red card. But I have to say, I thought there was some strange officiating in the Parma-Roma game today, but hats off to Fabrizio Pasqua, because he was told to go and check his pitch side monitor for that penalty. And how often do we see them overturn decisions seemingly under pressure once they check that pitch side monitor? And I do think it's something that should become normal for referees to look at the monitor and say, no, I was right in the first place. It wasn't a foul. And I do have to say credit to him for that. But yeah, it was all a bit chaotic. I think Rebic was absolutely brain dead to make a comment. And it was telling, there's an angle where you can see him mouth something. And then the referee turns around and flashes the red card. Rebic doesn't even flinch. He just keeps walking. He knows he's said something. So he's quite deliberately said something to the referee, knowing he's going to get sent off when his team have, 4 minutes of stoppage time left to play and they're trailing. It was unforgivable. And not only that, he's now out. So that's probably going to be, a 2-game ban, maybe 3? So he'll miss Fiorentina next week, which obviously would have been quite a big game for him. And then the following week, he's going to miss Sampdoria at home. Okay, they're games that Milan should probably win, but given the number of absences they already have, they don't need that. And we spoke about it last week, Kev, but I'd be going Roy Keane on Rebic in the dressing room after that one.
Yeah, maybe not as much as I would be on the for the last handful a couple of weeks earlier. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's got a spot at a music festival somewhere up the Riviera. We don't know. But the one thing on going back onto the Hernandez penalty incident, it was so quick. It was so his foul happened so quickly after it that I reckon maybe the ref was still just blinded by embarrassment after falling over.
Oh, that was, how funny was that though?
But then he had to go to the camera. So he's just fell over. Then he goes to the video monitor, and he must have still been thinking about that. And he can't have been thinking clearly. Like, am I going to give this penalty? And then they're going to show clips of me falling over again. And it's like, it must have been a horrific couple of minutes for him.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And Mario Rui, I think he's done that on purpose. I don't really, but it was just very funny. Very, very funny. Because I think Pascual was injured after that. Because he was kind of hobbling about a little bit. And I think if it wasn't already in stoppage time, I think he'd have gone off. And to be honest with you, I think this just kind of shows why very, very often players like Theo Hernandez, not in the incident that he did go down, but they do go down. Because if they're charging at full speed, a little bit of contact can actually hurt you, you know? But obviously when he was stepping out of the box, he wasn't galloping at full pace down the flank. But Kev, credit to Napoli. They've had their difficulties. Politano got a big goal, and this is a big, big win. They're right in the conversation again for the top four, like you kind of said. But just to put some numbers on it, they're now on 50 points. They're two behind Atalanta, and they're level with Roma. Obviously, they have a game in hand over both of those teams, which will be played against Juve, not on the 17th of March now. It's been moved again to the 7th of April. And if they can keep getting results like this, you'd probably have them as, I don't know, would they be favourites to push Atalanta?
Well, they're certainly favourites to push Atalanta. I think even with Juventus's win this weekend, I think that's a fairly even game. You know, sometimes you look at teams that have got a game in hand, you think, oh, it's against top of the league or it's against bottom of the league. That's winning or that's losing or whatever. So, you just wonder if they do win next week against Roma, and it is at the Diego Maradona, I believe. I'm going to make
which?
Next week against Roma. Napoli are at home.
Sorry, no, it's in Rome. Napoli are away against Roma and Juve.
Okay. To be honest, I can still see them winning. And that actually even worse so then. I think if they were to take those points from Roma in the capital, then you could see them, you know, then it's a top five, if you like. We've got breaking away and one of those sides dropping out in the Champions League race.
Mm. Yeah, well, I wasn't expecting you to finish speaking so quickly, and I was kind of in a bit of a daze, because when have you ever stopped speaking quite that quickly? But we'll move on. Inter are top because they beat Torino 2-1 away from home. Lautaro Martinez header late on. I think it was the 85th minute, won it for them. It took them a long, long time to even test Salvatore Sirigu in this one. And then Romelu Lukaku put them ahead. Torino leveled quite quickly afterwards. And then Lautaro popped up. And Ewan actually did the report on the post-match for this. His post-match is going up tomorrow. And he basically made the point that Lautaro's goal could be potentially decisive at both ends of the season come May, because he also said this, and you also said it off air, but it's a cliche, but that is the kind of win that champions get.
Yeah, because obviously they into first half looked like they kind of thought they could comfortably win it in the second, and I kind of expected them to come out, and there was just no real urgency from them. It was one of those performances where more than a few players are a little bit below their best. And if they do go and draw this game, it's maybe what starts giving hope to the other sides around them, maybe particularly Juventus now that they are out of the Champions League. And it's largely because of the opposition. If that was to happen last week and they were to come away with a draw against Atalanta, albeit at home, you'd say, you know, it's a solid point. You know, Atalanta are a good side, but against Torino fighting for their lives, people start to just probably form unnecessary questions because they've looked relatively strong. But yeah, to get the win, it's the old, performance worthy of champions. And I really like the Lautaro header just because of where it came in from, going slightly behind him. He had to focus on getting enough power on it and also directing it past Sirigu. And it certainly was deserving of giving them victory.
He's so good in the air, isn't he?
Yeah, for somebody who doesn't appear that tall, I don't know whether it's just because physically he plays alongside Lukaku. Again, I'm not even sure of the heights of these two players, but Lukaku's got such more of a physical presence. Then sometimes because Sanchez is almost the player that kind of comes in and out for those, you link him so much more closely to Martinez that, you know, they're both, he is small in stature.
Yeah.
And you kind of put him in that sort of, that same bracket as that mobile.
Well, I've got the numbers for you, Kev. So Alexis Sanchez is 1.68 meters tall. Lautaro Martinez is 1.74. So he's only what's that, 6 centimeters taller than Alexis? And then Lukaku is 1.9 meters tall. So quite considerably bigger than both. Sorry, you're taking a drink. That was good.
I suppose it's all about the leap, isn't it?
Yeah, and Lautaro's is impressive, and I think you're right. He doesn't look like he should be good in the air, but he really is. He scored a fair few headers. And even if we're taking headers out of it, you remember the goal he scored against Atletico Madrid? So it was a preseason friendly, and they were opening the wonder or something, and it was a ball into the back post, and Lautaro flew in the air. It was like a flying kick. It was beautiful. Beautiful. So the signs have been there from since the very, very beginning that he's been good in the air and not necessarily always with his head. But that was a big, big win for Inter, who are now, oh, look at that, Kev. Inter are 9 points clear at the top of the Serie A table. We had a bit of a disagreement last week over Inter's lead at the top and how many points they'd eventually win Serie A by. I know it's early, but I said, you said 9 points maximum. I said it'd be more than 9 points. And you said it would be Milan fewer than 9 points between them. And I said Milan won't finish second and Inter will finish 9 points minimum ahead of whoever finishes second. Do you want to change anything there?
No.
You need to stop making these arguments with me because Quags is on 9 goals.
Yeah, well, this time last season, or maybe even a little bit later in the year, would we have thought that Inter would finish a point behind Juventus? Because I think with this big gap now, they can win the league early. And I think because of the season we've had, I think this year more than any other, if a side wins the league with two or three, and oddly enough, possibly because of Conte, the way he is a sort of a very pragmatic coach, he'd be looking for next year and thinking, let's get my players a break.
You know, I don't think so.
Well, what with the Euros, so it's like, let's try and give these players the best possible start, bearing in mind that there's going to be a European Championships. So that's where I think that, you know, sometimes in an ideal world, if everybody's pushing at 100% all the time, yeah, then a big margin can come in. But I'm kind of taking the approach that you will drop a few points once.
Okay.
Things have been secured.
Right. Well, on that, I'm just going to throw this back at you. I don't really believe it, but I've kind of got to say it. Well, if Inter win the Scudetto when there are 4 games left, they've won the league by 12 points. I don't care about the final table. If they've won it with 4 games left, that's 4 by 3, 12 points. They've won it by 12 points. If they win it with 6 games left, which they obviously won't, they've won it by 18 points. That's the way I'm looking at it, which I know isn't true, but...
No, because you said they'd finish. They would finish.
Yeah, and the league finishes when the team... Inter's league finishes when they win the league.
I don't think that is how leagues work.
No, it's absolutely not. But I did say at the top, I don't believe what I'm about to say, but let me have it anyway. What's next? What is next? Juve. Oh, we've got to talk about this, don't we? Because Juve went away to Cagliari and they won, I believe it was 3-1. I kind of stopped paying attention after a while. They did. They won 3-1. Cristiano Ronaldo scored a hat-trick in the first half. We've not spoken since Juve got knocked out of Europe, but I think it's fair to say that Cristiano Ronaldo deserves to take a big chunk of the blame, not only because he was anonymous in, I guess, both legs, with the exception of a penalty appeal in the first leg and stoppage time, but not only was he anonymous, he actively went against Juve because he was put in a wall late on and he turned his back and opened his legs. And guess where the ball went? It went through his legs and it went in. So he's come in for a lot of criticism after this and people basically just started saying things that most people who have watched Juve over the last 5 years have thought anyway, which is that, not pointing fingers at Cristiano Ronaldo, but his signing was a failure. And I think we even said it on this podcast last week. His signing at Juve is a failure, and that's not because he hasn't been good. He's been brilliant. But Juve are not as good as they used to be because of his arrival, which isn't because of him. It's because of the club. And he scored a hat-trick against a team in the relegation zone, and all of a sudden thinks that that is... Like, everyone's going with this narrative line that he's responded to his critics. No, he hasn't. His critics are saying that he hasn't done it for Juve in the Champions League. Not that he can't score a hat-trick at will against a basement dweller in Serie A. I had to check myself there. But Kev, he did that celebration as well, where he like cupped his ear after scoring a third. Is he forgetting that he should have been sent off?
God, how do I unpack all that? fill in my own thoughts. Okay, so let's start with midweek. The wall was a shambles, let alone Ronaldo's place in it.
Yeah, right. The wall's a shambles, but if Cristiano stands, he blocks it.
Yeah, well, if they all stand together as well, you know, that being that, the performance from him was bad. Let's leave that in the near past-ish. You say about the cup end of the year with the third goal tonight. I was kind of a little bit let down. I'm over let down by Ronaldo. The way that he goes off and does his traditional look at me, whatever you would call that, spin and throw the arms down with the first goal, you know, because even before he scores the hat trick, it was almost a, look at how good I am. You know, it's almost to say, what happened midweek? You know, I'm doing what I am doing. And you would say that he has been an absolute success on the pitch in Italy for Juventus. You know,
but to his credit, even in the Champions League, before this Porto time, he was the only player who had scored a knockout goal for Juve in the Champions League since he signed. And then Chiesa obviously smashed it against Porto.
Yeah, and you'd argue, was it the hat-trick against Atletico last year before? You know, he was doing his job there because he's saving them. And then it's up to the other players to help push them again, that little bit further. But I suppose in a way, and you can't really get away from the Ronaldo and Messi comparisons because it's, you know, it's followed both of them their entire careers. You'd like to see a little bit more humility. Messi after Champions League defeat.
Are we really doing this?
Defeats. Well, no, but he's kind of. It looks as though he takes the collective burden on. You know, he doesn't then go and score a goal and give it the whole.
Yeah.
You know, shut up, look at me. You know, that's what I mean from, you know,
having okay.
And being a teammate. It looks like it wears on him slightly longer than it does Cristiano, where Cristiano uses the first opportunity for a personal triumph to almost say, look, I can do this. It's what's around me which is the problem. Whether that's the quality of the players or the setup that didn't get the best out of him in midweek. And that's what you'd like to, you know, that's what I'd like to see, is just that today almost he would have scored a hat trick and it would have gone without the year cup and without the sort of, you know, the grandiose celebration of the goals, and still looked like he was hurting from midweek, because it didn't look like he was hurting from midweek. It looked like, I was hurting on Wednesday, but now it's like, look at me again. It's, you know,
yeah, I'm doing it. It was more of a, how dare you question me, rather than a, it was bad, you know? And there is a difference. There is a big difference. But it's not a surprise, is it?
No, it's not. I think it's in his character, and there's things in our characters that, you know, we do from time to time, you know, even we don't like. I'd like to think that maybe he goes back and privately thinks to himself, it probably wasn't the best look doing the cupping of the year. However, he's never going to come out and say that or even sort of apologise for anything he does, because, you know, look how far his character's got him in the game.
Yeah, well, there was that. I'll never forget the 2014 Champions League final when they played Atletico Madrid, and Atleti were dead on their feet for the whole of the final, and they were 1-0 up until stoppage time, and Sergio Ramos scored a really good header, to his credit, to send it to extra time. And he just knew after that, all right, Real Madrid win, because Atleti don't have enough energy to walk off the pitch, never mind to play another half hour. And then I can't remember who scored, but then Marcello scored, and then Bale and Marcello, right? And then in the 120th minute, Cristiano Ronaldo got his goal, took his shirt off, went to the corner, did his big, all the photos were Cristiano, you know? And
but then midweek, you know, yourself, and plenty of other prominent people, sports writers on Twitter were expecting that to be the narrative of the Porto game, that he'd, you know, he'd be completely invisible for most of the game. And as soon as they sort of got it level at 2-1, that he would pop up with the winner. Obviously it didn't happen. It's just, you know, we say, obviously it hasn't worked. It's worked for Ronaldo, you know, performances and stuff. It's not worked for Juve to take him over the line in Europe. You'd have to really look into the numbers to work out how much of a success commercially it's been, because they're playing him a huge amount of money. Everybody, you know, anytime any of this, you know, which all started with Real Madrid, with the whole Galactico project, where they would suddenly produce all the shirt sale figures for how many people had bought a Cristiano, you know, a Ronaldo or a Beckham, Zidane shirt. And then you actually look at the, you know, what you've got to look at behind those figures is actually have the shirt sales gone up, not just who they're getting on the back. Because for every Juventus fan that's gone into the club shop in the last couple of years and put Ronaldo on their back, it's probably because they've stopped putting Dybala on there, or Matuidi, or all these other players that have left over the years. Higuain, probably.
I forgot about Blaise Matuidi.
Yeah, I don't know why he came into my mind all of a sudden. But that's where you've got to really say that this has been a vanity project and nothing more. And again, I'll go back to Messi for one more time. You've got the contract situation with Messi at Barcelona, and the likes of PSG and Manchester City are seriously thinking about, you know, what can be done, because it will only be a vanity project now for the next couple of years. And that is what Ronaldo was for Juventus. And you just need to own it and say that is exactly what it was. You know, we knew we were going to take a little bit of a loss, hoping that, commercially the figures were going to allow us to get more advertising and stuff. You know, they've probably not taken anywhere near a loss as suggested, because, you know, somebody came out with this €1 million a goal that it was costing them, because it doesn't take into account the increased commercial contracts and things that they've won. But it has been a vanity project, probably for both him and them as well, because he has this whole wanting to win another Ballon d'Or, wanting to be a player that's won leagues in the in England, in Spain, and, you know, and all this. Nobody can call it an overwhelming success for either side, really.
Now, there are talks coming out of the Madrid press, which is quite curious, that he might even end up going back there. Personally, I don't see it, given that they're determined to sign Mbappe in 2022 and probably Haaland before that. It's got to be Paris, then MLS for Cristiano, right?
Yeah, you would think. Again, I don't know. The problem is that a lot of them, because of the depressed market and numbers of some of these people, you know, some of these players still assume that they can get. If people are having concerns about whether they can sign a Messi type, or, you know, Messi, or, you know, or people can take Mbappe off of PSG's hands, because he looks like he's agitating for a move away from PSG, almost having won everything with them. You wonder whether they've got it in them to go the Ronaldo route. And then, you know, before we finish, I suppose we should probably get onto the fact that he probably shouldn't have been on the pitch even.
No, I mean, he assaulted Alessio Cranio. There was a loose ball in the box and Cranio came to claim it, and Cristiano stuck his boot in, caught Cranio in the face with the underside of his boot, left him all bloodied and cut up. And this was at 1-0. I don't understand how he didn't get sent off. I cannot for the life of me understand how he stayed on the pitch. It was a horrendous foul.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where the goalkeeper's diving. So maybe because, I don't know, did it go to VAR? I can't remember. I can't recall if it went to VAR. I don't think it did go to VAR. But the goalkeeper dives, so it almost looks like the goalkeeper's diving I suppose instinctively you think the goalkeeper's dived towards his feet. But actually, when you look at it, it's a bit like when they class an elbow now. It's like if you've brought it above your shoulder level. And Ronaldo's foot actually makes contact above his hip. And he's jumping slightly off of the ground as well. So it's well above, if you like, the general hip level for all the other players on the pitch. So it's endangering the opponent.
And where the ball is too. The ball's going out of play. You know, I felt very, very angry about it because I do not understand for the life of me how that is not a red card. Yeah. It was dreadful. Like one of those that you see and you kind of feel a bit woozy after watching it.
But then I don't think the penalty was a penalty either. Because the penalty is one of those, but where you said earlier, it's like any contact in the box does not constitute a penalty, a free kick. I don't know, even as much as 5 or 6 years ago, that's one of those where the player is doing his best to get contact with the ball towards the goal and bracing themselves for contact. Because there's milliseconds in the two players coming together. Mm. But now we're in this scenario that we discussed a few weeks ago where the player is now just looking to get any contact on the ball and avoid any contact get any contact because Ronaldo almost leaves his legs straight but make sure he gets some contact on the ball. I think he like toe pokes over the bar or wide because he knows then the contact instantly is going to draw a foul where he probably can score if he goes, he probably scores without the penalty if he goes at it in the other, with the other sort of.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Whatever.
Anyway, look, we've got to say, we've got to move on. Roma did another one of them and they lost 2-0 to Parma. It was Mkhitaryan a couple of weeks ago that you got angry with in their win, who won a penalty like that. And Lorenzo Pellegrini tried his best in the first half to do the same thing, although he didn't manage to get any contact from a Parma player. So somebody didn't get booked for a dive. I don't know what's happening with some of the officials this season. But anyway, Parma, they won 2-0. Valentin Meila and Dennis Mann both started. And what a surprise when Gervinho's not on the pitch. Parma looked twice as good as when he is on the pitch. Graziano Pelle finally started. He really does exist. He's not just an esports signing or something like that. He's a real player. And he played very, very well. But Gaston Brugman in the middle was phenomenal for Parma. And I never thought I'd see him put in a performance like what he did. And it was all the more important given Juraj Kutska's absence as well. But Kev, this is huge. And it doesn't change all that much at the bottom of the table yet. But I do think that it will. Because Parma are now just 1 point behind Torino, sorry. Toro do have 2 games in hand. But Parma, importantly, are 3 points off Cagliari. And it's getting a little bit interesting. Given the fixtures that we went through last week, Parma have 3 of their next 5 are very winnable, and we had kind of written off Roma and 2 others. And I think they play Milan too, which now you think they drew at Milan when they were dreadful and Milan were good. Now Parma might do something. I'm expecting Parma to get between 7 and 9 points from the next six games, the next few games. And I don't think anyone else down the bottom will do that. Cagliari, maybe, just because of Semplici. But even the likes of Benevento and Spezia might be at risk of dropping back down into things. You could possibly say Genoa as well, although I'm not so sure about that. Kev, am I crazy to think now that both Parma and Cagliari are going to stay up?
It still looks a little bit like a battle for those for one place from Cagliari, Torino and Parma.
But there's always one team. Every season, there's one team that just falls.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because I kind of have Genoa because they just look a little bit more robust now. But the concern would be, like you say, for that team that drops like a stone, if just some doubt sets in with Spezia and Benevento because they're, you know, newly promoted. What I'd hate to see them do is really go against kind of their style of play that has got them plenty of points because they do play some nice football. And I think, you know, you just think one of them would suddenly start trying to defend games almost from the, you know, just defending a point from the opening minute and then just start throwing games away and getting dragged down into that relegation fight. But it is possible. Without looking at the fixtures, it's just interesting to see if they can get a couple of wins, then maybe that will allow Spezia and Benevento not to sort of get themselves dragged in.
To be quite honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if anyone in the bottom half of the table got relegated. Anyone. I think Samp and Bologna will be okay. But the rest of them, I wouldn't be surprised because a team does always fall. And we joked earlier in the season about, oh, Genoa are winning games early. Did they do it too early, Kev?
Well, they won certainly in the first week was like 4-1 against somebody. But yeah, I think that was it for Genoa, and then they were dreadful. And I worried about them for some time, and I worried about them mainly because I want travel to open up, and I'd like to actually get back for another Derby della Lontana. But I think at the moment under Ballardini, they'll have enough confidence in themselves staying up. It's everything from Spezia down, I think, is looking a little risky.
Okay, fair enough. If we're going from there, I think Benevento are in trouble. And to be honest, I do anyway, because Filippo Inzaghi, he is a very, very good Serie B coach. A very, very good Serie B coach. He still has a lot to prove in Serie A. We saw him with Bologna, he was a disaster. Milan, I'm willing to just write that off and say that it didn't happen because we saw Milan over the last decade with the last 13 months excluded. Difficult to do anything there. But Pippo Inzaghi, I'm not 100% convinced, and I do think that Benevento are unfortunately going to be in trouble. Also, there's been a bit of a fallout in the dressing room there. A couple of the important players have had a falling out. Sciatarella, Insigne, I'm not sure the others, but There was a fallout. Apparently, they kissed and made up and had a what's it called? I know the Italian word, but I can't think of the English word. A survival pact where they're going to put all their differences behind them and try to stay up, which is nice of you lads. It's literally what you're there for, but okay. I'd be worried about Benevento, worried about Torino, and one of the Ligurian teams. I just don't know. Crotone are done though, right?
Yeah, if you first watch them at the start against Lazio, they play some decent football. Yeah, we've been saying this all season. For the three promoted sides, they play some good football. It's just they just don't seem to hold it together often enough. I look at Crotone now, and I just think, who's going to grab Simi? Because he looks like he could do a job for quite a few. Of those sides at the lower end of the Serie A table that could just look for he's not necessarily a traditional target man, but when the ball goes up to him, it sticks. He looks like he'll score enough goals.
So
that's all I've got left for Crotone really this season, is to wonder if he can get him. I think the better he can perform towards the end of the season, he might get a move to a side.
Macias as well. Macias, you'd expect, will get a move in the summer. But yeah, Simi, Simi did this last time they were up. It was Simi and Cordads, and just about that. Like, there wasn't much else. But yeah, Crotone have played some nice stuff this season, even under Giovanni Stroppa at the beginning of the season. And his sacking recently, which came, 2 weeks ago, was a bit of a surprise. Cesar Cosmi has come in his place, and I mean, don't fancy him to do too much, right? He's a comedy character, but...
No, I love Cersei.
Everyone does.
His accent. I stumbled over some Italian program online, and but I sort of listened to him for about 3 or 4 minutes, you know, probably picking up 8 to 10 Italian words. But I was like, wow, hasn't he got a great... Because obviously they dub over him everything. I see him on British broadcasts. So hasn't he got a great sort of voice? He's got this gruffly... Anyway, sorry, that's my little... loving with Cersei Cosmi.
Fair enough. A lot of people
audiobooks.
Just for you. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure what it is you like about it, because you're listening to someone dubbing over his voice. So is it the person doing the dubbing?
No, this was when this week was probably the first time I'd heard it without someone dubbing over it.
I thought,
that's just a great, you know, I don't know if it's accent, region, or whatever, a way he talks, and I found it very therapeutic on the ears.
Fair enough. I mean, we all have things like that just kind of activate some of our senses, and I guess Cesar Cosmi is what does it for you, Kev. I'm just trying to see where he's born, because I don't know where he was born. He's born in, oh my god, where is that? Umbria. Do you know what? I only know about 2 people from Umbria, so I can't place his accents. Perugia is the I can only think of Italian words. The county that he's from. I hate when this happens. There is a certain thing that happens when you live in a country where English isn't the spoken language, and you start to experience words that you didn't experience when you lived in an English-speaking country that regularly. So then you only know them by the Italian or the Spanish or the Portuguese, whatever it is, word. So then when you've got to think of it in English, you can't do it. There's a lot of fruits and vegetables that I never ate at home, but I eat in Italy. And now, for example, carciofi. I love carciofi, and I can never think what they're called in English. I can never think of what they're called in English. I've got it now.
Yeah, but that's fine. Because I think there's terms that... you hear, you know, German, Spanish, Italian speakers use, because the country of their birth has kind of adopted it, because they never had a word for it. And it's often, you know, sporting phrases, or, you know, football, soccer phrases.
Yeah, it just makes you sound a bit stupid, or it makes you, when I'm speaking English, if one of those little things pops into my English, I then sound like I'm not speaking my first language, which is nonsense, because my Italian's dreadful, so it shouldn't be influencing me like this, but there we go, it does. Anyway, nobody cares, do they? Back to the Serie A. We're kind of almost finished, but not really. You watched Lazio Crotone. We were kind of touching on Crotone's side of things there, but this is... It turned out to be a big win for Lazio in the way that it came, but it shouldn't have been, because they should be seeing off Crotone quite easily, but it did take... a Felipe Caicedo late winner, 84th minute, which I suppose is quite early for him. He's usually about 10 minutes later than that. But Sergej Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto had scored, and Simi had got 2 for Crotone as well. But Kev, after level with you, it was 3 o'clock on Friday. I didn't watch this.
Yeah, well, I only sort of, because I was able to sort of watch it alongside doing something else. But Lazio should have had a bigger margin of victory. They let themselves down, certainly straight after the break. They were defensively there all over the place, and then conceded the penalty equaliser. And I saw a tweet from somebody shortly after the game, which kind of said that Lazio were frustrating because they so often in games show you how good they can be. And I thought that's kind of brilliantly summed up how they've been for large portions of this season. You can see the quality there. You know, they've had a group of players that have been together for a long time, so they should know, you know, how each other are making runs and stuff. And if you were a Lazio fan, it must be frustrating seeing that they've got it in them, but they have so rarely produced it this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. Was it Alistair McKenzie that was tweeting this? Because he was quite annoyed by this whole match.
I see quite a lot of Alistair's tweets, but I can't confirm nor deny that it was him. But let's say, yeah, it was.
Fair enough. Right. I don't know if he'll be pleased or not that you remembered him and then didn't remember him. But Atalanta are still fourth. They beat Spezia 3-1 also on Friday evening. Mario Pašalić, I'm very happy for, because he's had a difficult season. He was out injured for a long, long time, but this was the perfect game for him. When a team are quite difficult to break down and it doesn't take like nice, subtle footwork, it just takes someone forcing their way through. Pašalić is good for that, and he got two. Luis Muriel scored a beautiful goal, as he does, and he did his dance. And then Roberto Piccoli scored to make it 4-0 to Atalanta, although he didn't, because he scored for Spezia. He's on loan there, of course, from Atalanta this season. And he's now scored away to Atalanta, away to Roma, and away to, I think it's Milan. If it's not Milan, it's Inter this season. He's doing quite well for himself. Kev, you look like you've got something to say or ask.
No, I was checking the score, because I thought you just said that Atalanta won 4-1. I thought I've written that down again wrong, but no, it was 3.
So, it was 3-1, yeah, 3-1. I made a joke about it being 4-0, but no.
Okay. No, yes, if I was going to say anything, it was probably the Luis Muriel goal. It was another stunner for me. It's the way there's no particular pace on it, but he curls the effort so high and at the angle that it's far enough to the goalkeeper's left and high enough above him and dipping at the right time that it goes into the top corner, with the goalkeeper knowing that there is no point diving. So he kind of just watches it in, which was beautiful.
It reminded me, and I know that this isn't going to be a goal that everybody remembers, but Atalanta and Roma fans certainly will. So by extension, maybe Lazio fans will as well. But last season, in one of the last normal games, Pašalić came on against Roma for the last few minutes and scored with his first touch about 12 seconds after coming on. And it was the same position, and it was the same little arch on the shot where it curled up and into the top corner so perfectly like that. But yeah, it was a good result for Atalanta.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of when somebody plays almost a ball kind of over the top stroke around a defender, just so it's got enough backspin on it so it falls into, you know, an on-rushing strikers. But obviously it was too high. Just the way he sort of clipped it, he did that sort of little, very little backlift and just sort of spinning the ball. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, people that are listening, go out and take a look.
Yeah, do. And there's not a lot of things that Serie A do well, but their YouTube channel is actually one of them. So head over to that and watch. They've got nice 4-minute videos of everything on there. What else? Was there? Benevento lost 4-1 to Fiorentina. Dusan Vlahovic scored a first half hat-trick, which seemed impressive until Cristiano Ronaldo went and did it in 15 minutes fewer. But Kev, this is a nice, important win for Fiorentina. Vlahovic is coming into, I mean, quite a nice player this season for them.
Yeah, and guess who gets my player of the week over Cristiano? So,
I mean, it's deserved. So he was fantastic.
He was, yeah. It's if Fiorentina can get everything else right and create enough even half chances, because this is what a couple of these were. They sort of just fouled him, and he was just ready. He was ready to pounce. He was in the right area. He took his goals, and that, you know, and he always looks sharp from that aspect. It's kind of maybe they don't create enough. And on the flip side of this, that was what Benevento's problem was. And when we were talking about them maybe struggling later in the season, they were far too passive at times, despite having lots of the ball. It was quite even where you were looking at possession and kind of chances going forward, but not, you know, Fiorentina created the more clear cut. And Vlahovic is all-round play looks impressive at times, but now he's getting even more clinical in front of goal. Could be a big year next year if Fiorentina, what we say every year, got other things together.
Yeah, well, Vlahovic is going to sign for Juve or something. Ribery will retire and it'll all just go terribly wrong for them again, probably. But I hope not. I would like Fiorentina to be decent, but they do just seem like they're very far away from that.
Well, they'll buy a load of aging stars again. I can't remember who it was. Well, I know the three players. It was Ribery, Bonaventura and Valero, because I think he came off the bench.
Callejon as well.
Yeah, and they were saying that they're all in their mid to, well, early to mid 30s. And it's like, well, can you really replace that quality with the money Fiorentina have got, a depressed market, unless you go out and buy more aging players, and you never really know what you're going to get.
All right. Sorry, you keep kind of catching me off guard. Bologna beat Sampdoria 3-1. This was Muzabaro, Matthias Svanberg and Roberto Soriano scored. I had in my head that Nicola Sansone did as well, but of course he had his goal ruled out for offside late on. Fabio Quagliarella got his 9th of the season. He needs just 4 more and then he can have an early summer. Kev, are you I'm not even going to ask, are you getting nervous now, because you're more than happy to succeed here, but are you resigned to the fact that I'm going to win yet?
No, because I still think that his scoring rate, you know, is a bit up and down this season, so he could quite comfortably go on a 4 or 5 game streak of not scoring, and then suddenly, you know, the
score a hat trick
down your forehead, or score a hat trick. But I think I'd still win if he then did that and didn't score again. But
if he went 4 games, didn't score, and then scored a hat trick, he'd score one more.
Well, maybe. You know, he might down tools because he think, oh, a hat trick, I'll go out on a high. This was more depressing than anything else. Because
why?
When I went to Bologna a couple of years ago, it was against Sampdoria. It was a lovely sunny Easter weekend, and it looked quite nice and bright at the Dell'Ara, and it made me miss being able to travel and watch football again.
Well, if it's any consolation, I had the same feeling during Parma-Roma, because Parma-Roma is one of the best games I've ever been at the Tardini, where Parma actually beat Roma 2-0 last season there as well. And it was just a really nice time. I remember I met a couple of people in the press box that I hadn't met before. No, actually, what's his name? The Sky Sports presenter, the Scottish guy.
Oh,
with the yellow tie on deadline day. Yeah. What's his name?
Oh,
he was there anyway, and he ended up sat beside me. No, it's I know it, but I can't think of it. He ended up sat beside me, and he had arranged to speak to Chris Smalling after the game. So I was kind of helping him out around the place, and he was like, "Oh, you can come and speak to Chris with me if you want." And I was like, "Yeah, perfect." So got a nice exclusive for the website on that. So that was good. So speaking to Chris Smalling, great atmosphere at that one as well. A big, big Parma performance on the day. Kutska and Kulusevski in particular, I remember. Oh, it was one of the best games I've seen since moving to Italy, to be honest, which is rare for like a 2-0 home win, right? But it was fantastic. Just a good experience too. Who are we? How are we to know 5-6 months later? We'd only be dreaming of things like that again. But Jim White is his name.
Yeah, I saw him. I was watching a documentary about Justin Fashion. And Jim White was interviewing him when he was at Hearts. He ended his career at Hearts, apparently, which I didn't know. Justin Fashion, not Jim White. But yeah, he's not really aged too much.
No.
We digress once again.
Yeah, how do we get there? 55 minutes in. What is left? Sassuolo Verona 3-2. Two of, I suppose you could say, the hipsters' teams, although I hate saying that because it basically just means these are two teams that are good to watch, but most people don't know about. And Sassuolo came out on top. It was kind of, Verona were always kind of playing catch up here, right? Locatelli scored after 4 minutes, then Darko Lazovic equalized just before halftime. Filip Juricic scored after 51 minutes to put Sassuolo back in front. And went mad, as if he had scored the winner in the 85th minute. He had his top off and everything. By the way, ripped. I did not see that coming from Filip Juricic. But anyway, if you've not seen it, go to Sassuolo's Twitter account and look at how ripped he is. Federico Di Marco scored again because he keeps scoring goals and making Inter look silly. But then Hamad Junior Traore, whatever you want to call him. Sassuolo call him Junior, so we'll go with that. Ahmad's brother basically scored a late winner, capping off a good week for the two of them, given Ahmad scored a beautiful header against Milan in the Europa League on Thursday. But Kev, this was fun.
Yeah, after the game, I was torn between whether I was a little gutted that Verona didn't get more out of the game, but then also that Sassuolo probably did shade it. Because the Verona goals, as much as they really put up a good show, Lazovic was criminally unmarked. You know, just left a wander to the back post. And
it's Sassuolo, isn't it?
Well,
don't worry about that. He's in the box. Leave him there.
But they'd done so much more going forward that they probably deserved to get that break at the end, because it was a really scrappy corner. And actually, that Juricic goal, I really liked, because it was that whole the defender's coming across. If he decides to pull his leg all the way back, he's not going to get the shot off in time.
Mm.
So he does that little toe poke. That it's quite different, but the one thing it instantly reminded me of is the 2002 World Cup, where the semi-final, Ronaldo the original, I think scoring his second, decided to toe poke to catch the keeper off, but he was on the edge of the box. It wasn't, it was quite a similar position-wise as Juricic. But it's that piece of improvisation which, you probably don't get from some footballers that has got him that goal. So maybe that's why he was so ecstatic, but maybe just being in the gym all week and wanted to show that body.
At least he did it for an important goal though, Kev, right? And not the fourth in a 4-1 win in the last minute. Anyway, the last game I believe that we haven't mentioned, you're going to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right, is Genoa 1, Udinese 1. Goran Pandev scored and so did Rodrigo De Paul. But unless you have anything to say about this, I don't, because I didn't watch it, to be honest, because I said during the week that you'd want to be having a word with yourself if you're planning on sitting down on a Saturday night and watching Genoa Udinese.
Well, if you were in the UK, they didn't even broadcast it, so okay. you would have struggled. But because something similar happened at Lazio, quality wise and goal wise, if you're a fan of Pandev. God, I tell you what, I was really struggling with that because I started thinking of Darko Panchev, and I think now I can't even remember what the name of the full name is of this person. So yeah, Goran Pandev. It was a
what
lovely.
What are you talking about?
The goal.
Okay.
Go and check out the goal. It was a lovely turn. He sort of what was a really powerful shot. Took it first time, spun, and got a goal. That's about the only good thing of this game. Because
go watch the highlights of Genoa Udinese, or at least the first highlight, because it was 8 minutes in, so it's going to be the first thing that happened, right?
Yeah, it's the only thing I think that happened the first time.
Okay, right. Before we finish, I do want to point out something. I got a tweet during the week, and sometimes when you get a random tweet from an account you don't follow, you kind of think, "Well, what's this? Why are you tweeting me this?" And I kind of thought that at first, but I got a tweet during the week from a football podcast called The Football with Flynn Show. I've never heard of this podcast, and I saw it and I was like, well, I don't know what that is. But anyway, the tweet read, episode 13 of the Football with Flynn Show episode 13 of the Football with Flynn Show. Flynn is the big 12 today. In this ep, Flynn looks at all the evening's Europa League games, talking about United AC Milan. And then he said second in England versus second in Italy, which I suppose it was at the time. It's not in England anymore, right? I think Leicester are second, but I don't know. We're not here for that. And then he said, who will win? And then added me in. So I went and watched the video. And I've got to say, Kev, I don't know if you've seen this, but I retweeted it. And his taste in football shirts is phenomenal, because he's wearing he's a 12-year-old kid, by the way. And hats off, he's a very good little podcast host. I think he's got a big, big future ahead of him. And he's wearing the Napoli Argentina shirt. He's got a David Silva Real Sociedad shirt over his shoulder. And he's got football books along the front. I think he's a very, very talented young lad. So did you watch this?
No, I only saw your reaction. I may go back and find
it
now. Yeah.
So everybody listening, go over and go onto Twitter, and you can either type in the Football with Flynn show, Flynn is F-L-Y-N-N, or go to @football_Flynn. Give him a follow, watch his videos. He's a lovely guy from Donegal too, so he's got a very nice accent. If anyone has ever heard, someone compared it to Patrick Kendrick, compared it to Rory McIlroy, but he's from Donegal. He's not from that part of the country. He a bit more of a Seamus Coleman twang to his voice, and it's great. So head over, watch his videos, and just give him some thumbs up, because he's doing really, really good work, and he's putting out videos as well, which is quite impressive for a 12-year-old kid. My God, I feel old, Kev.
Do you think he knew Napoli would be wearing their Argentina kit?
Probably. I mean, he knows everything. You listen to him and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, at that age, his memory hasn't gone like mine.
That's true. This is true. What age did your memory go at?
Oh, I don't. I reckon 35, maybe. I started feeling that as I learnt something else, it was replacing something that was already there. You know, not crucial things like pin
numbers. You joined the podcast at what age? 37. Thanks for that. Anyway, Kev, we've somehow rambled on for an hour and 2 minutes, just the two of us. So say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
And read our women's football stuff too. Goodbye, everybody. Speak to you soon.
Tifosi e con trombe e bandiere, accompagniamo la squadra del cuore, con il grido, oh Parma, sei forte! Batteremo le squadre avversarie, mai nessuno li potrà fermare, sono forti e sanno lottare, fanno gol, sempre gol, del campionato son la gloria. Forza Parma, questo è il grido di battaglia, Forza Parma, Forza Parma, di gol, sempre gol.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.